Hello. This is Mike Pinder, co-founder of the Moody Blues. You're listening to WBAI, New York.
The U.S. prison system incarcerates approximately 2.5 million people, the highest number of any industrialized nation, while prisons remain the fastest growing industry in the country.
All my people inside and out, where you at? You're listening to 99.5 FM WBAI. This radio show is called On the Count, the Prison and Criminal Justice Report. My name is Andre Monty Ward, and I'm joined in studio by my really good and strong, amazing hosts, Harmony and Justice, are both in the house today, along with our guests, and we're really excited to have everyone join us today. We're in the mighty borough of Brooklyn. And as you know, Brooklyn's a really powerful borough, as well as the other boroughs, but it's nothing like Brooklyn for those who are from Brooklyn. Mm-hmm. And so today it's a bit rainy outside, a bit cloudy, but we're going to share some information with you today to obviously inform you on what some of the latest occurrences that are happening in New York City relative to criminal justice or criminal legal reform, as some frame it. And we have an exciting show with two powerful guests. Before we actually get into the show, however, I really want to acknowledge all of the people who remain behind the prison gates and walls, just letting you know that we remain in activist and advocacy mode, representing the issues that are most important to you. And for those who are inside, we ask you to write us here at 388 Atlantic Avenue here in Brooklyn, New York. Send us your letters, send us your thoughts and ideas, because we know that while inside, there's a greater degree of time to reflect, to really formulate thoughts and ideas that can lend and support this movement around criminal legal or criminal justice reform. So we want to lift you all up and extend a happy new year to all of you. Although you are under some really horrible circumstances, we really want to extend a happy new year to you and know that this year we will continue here at On the Count, as well as in this movement, to represent you and to change the conditions that negatively impact your life. And so I want to kind of get right into it. I have two amazing guests with me, no strangers to me and others here. Before we get into that, though, Harmony, how are you feeling this morning?
Good morning, everyone. I'm feeling fantastic. fantastic. Happy New Year to all out there. Remembering the women, of course, at Avianca, Conic, and Bedford. And Happy New Year to everybody in studio. Keep hope alive.
And Harmony?
Good morning, everyone. Great to be back. Happy New Year's to you all. I'm echoing the shout-outs to our females behind the walls, wanting you to remember that we are out here keeping your ideas and your hopes and your dreams alive as we move forward through this year.
And I have two guests in studio with me today, none other than Gabriel Saya, who obviously represents and is the co-founder of Katal, and we have Taryn Merkel, who joins us from the Brennan Center, to go into some of their history and their work, starting with Gabriel. He's the founder, the co-founder and co-executive director of the Katal Center for Health, Equity, and Justice. Gabriel brings over 20 years of organizing and advocacy experience to dismantle mass incarceration, end the war on drugs, and build communities. And, you know, Saya has served as the chief architect and strategist for numerous campaigns from August 2015 to June 2017. He was the lead architect and chief strategist on the Close Rikers campaign, which successfully forced New York City to adopt as its official policy the closure of Rikers Island Jail Complex, and just a litany of other things that Gabriel has been involved in. He has appeared in a wide range of broadcasts, online and print media, including New York Times, New York One, MSNBC, CBS, NBC, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. Gabriel, welcome to On the Count.
Thanks, Andre. Thanks for having me here.
Thank you for joining us. And we also have Taryn Merkel, who's with us. And Taryn is senior counsel in the Brennan Center's Justice Program and its Law Enforcement Leaders to Reduce Crime and Incarceration Initiative. Taryn's work focuses on building a smarter, stronger, and fairer criminal justice system while reducing unnecessary incarceration and promoting public safety. Taryn previously served as an assistant U.S. attorney in the Eastern District of New York for more than 16 years. She served as deputy chief of the criminal division and as chief of the civil rights and organized crime and gang sections. In civil rights, Taryn supervised all human trafficking and criminal civil rights cases in the district and also served in the business and securities fraud section. In addition, she served as co-founding chair of the Brooklyn Human Trafficking Task Force from 2013 to 19. Has received various awards and honors from, among others, the U.S. Department of Justice, the Women in Federal Law Enforcement Foundation, and the New York Law Journal. Taryn, welcome to On the Count.
Thank you so much for having me. Happy New Year.
Likewise. And so we want to get right into it. One of the hot button issues that are occurring now within the criminal justice reform landscape is the idea of bail reform. And I know, Gabriel, obviously you and those at Katal have been working on bail reform work, informing the public about that. There are a series of articles that you all have published and written on your website. So this is obviously close to you, this issue. And Taryn, similarly, right, you have been like advancing this and lifting this up in a certain way, writing about it, formulating analyses to share with the world. But we know that bail reform has been called into question by many people, right? On one side of the aisle, people say that it was rushed, it wasn't really well thought out, while on the other side of the aisle, people are saying, well, let's give it a chance first, right? We haven't developed data or anything, but we know the negative impact that the previous practices around bail reform has had on people that are in jail. So, Gabe, like, give us some historical context, right, for our listening audience who may be unaware of bail reform and its history. Talk to us a little bit about the history of bail reform.
Sure. It's helpful to go back to when we first started with the bail laws, revising them the first time in New York, which was back in the late 60s. And there was a number of arguments at that time about what kind of pretrial laws to have on the books, what kind of bail laws to have on the books. And they passed a new set of laws in 1971. And when they did that, the legislature wanted to make sure that they were protecting the presumption of innocence, that people would not be detained simply because they couldn't afford to pay a bail. They wanted to make sure that they were not accusing people or holding people, rather, pre-trial without them having been convicted. And so they set up the bail structure that we had in New York, which over time became different from and unusual in comparison to the rest of the country. And that's important because when you fast forward to the last 4 or 5 years, there's been a big push for bail reform, not just here in New York, but around the country. Increasingly, people are coming are building campaigns to end the practice of jailing people pretrial, to address the wealth disparities that exist in our pretrial system. You know, you got people sitting in jails across the country and here in New York simply because they couldn't afford to pay a bail, where somebody else who had the means could pay that bail and walk free. So the idea that the reforms here in New York were rushed is just simply not true. There's been a fight underway for bail reform here in the state for a number of years. And in fact, last year in 2018, or I should say 2 years ago now in 2018, the state assembly passed actually a fairly robust bail reform package at that time after a long debate. And the Senate had its own various proposals on the table as well. They were controlled at that time in 2018 by the Republicans and then switched when the Democrats took over in 2019. The reforms are controversial in large part because they're systemic in the scope of what they're changing here, right? That's why you're seeing all these law enforcement folks challenge the reforms and use a lot of scare tactics to try to say, oh, this is going to cause the end of the world. This is going to lead to more crime. They're not drawing on data. They're not drawing on facts. They're using scare tactics to scare the public into thinking that if these reforms get implemented, then the world is going to end. We heard the same thing when the Rockefeller drug laws were reformed in 2009. The prosecutor, the special narcotics prosecutor here in the city of New York at that time, this is again 2009 around the Rockefeller laws, said, mm-hmm. Well, the legislature passes this, it's the road to hell. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, crime has gone down in the 10 years since the Rockefeller reforms have passed. The prison system has been, the number of people in prison, rather, had been reduced. Those reforms, they need to be fixed in many ways and in advance, but they've worked. They did not come to pass on these terrible things that the prosecutors and law enforcement were saying. And so we have the same situation here. You have police and law enforcement and others saying this is the end of the world. We have to do something. But really they're saying that because a lot of their power has been restricted or otherwise taken away. Mm-hmm. And that's the systemic part here. And it's where we should be headed. We should not have law enforcement controlling this system entirely to have a fair justice system. We have to bring into this some fairness, some equity. These reforms are aimed to do that. In likelihood, they're going to enhance public safety.
Sure. And obviously, you know, when we're talking about the bail reforms, right, we know we're dealing with severely unjust pretrial practices, right? And obviously, it negatively impacts people in different ways. But stand in the historical kind of framework you just rolled out, Gabriel. Taryn, do you have anything to add to that around the historical piece? And then I know, Gabriel, you referenced data. And Taryn, maybe you can talk about some of the data relative to what Gabe has just talked about from the historical perspective.
Absolutely. So I think the thing that's really important to remember about the whole bail structure in New York is one of the points that Gabriel made, which is that New York judges have not been permitted to consider dangerousness since 1971. It has been expressly prohibited for them to consider dangerousness. And what that has led to is people being incarcerated pretrial simply because they could not afford to pay bail. Everybody had a cash bail set, but only those who could afford to pay it were able to be released. So as of this time last year, just to give some numbers and put it in perspective, there were approximately 22,000 New Yorkers incarcerated in jails in the state, and approximately 8,000 of those folks were in New York City. And it's estimated that approximately 60% of them were pretrial detainees, meaning they weren't already sentenced or they weren't there for a violation of parole or something along those lines. And so what that means is in the state, over 13,000 people were incarcerated on average each day because they could not afford their bail. And the research is clear that this has a disparate impact on people of color and a disparate impact on people of lesser economic means. And it's not a question of, you know, keeping people in jail to protect the public. That has never been permissible in New York for the last 40 years. So the recent efforts to derail the bail reform are focusing on this question of dangerousness, but that has not been part of the law and has not been a permissible consideration for judges, and it has historically been our practice in New York not to do that. So the bail reform now is estimated to reduce the population of our pretrial inmates by about 40%. And the question is how, and, you know, there's a lot of categories of crimes that are no longer going to be available, or cash bail will no longer be available for judges as an option. The judge is going to be required to make a determination about what pretrial release conditions will best make sure that person comes back to court, whether it's text message reminders, pretrial supervision, some sort of bond. But the goal is to get people to come back to court. That's what bail is for.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, Taryn, you referenced this idea about bail reform impacting people like violent, nonviolent. Kind of want to transition to that, Gabriel, and talk a little bit about the impact of bail reform on, like, the difference between, like, nonviolent and violent and the impact of bail reform on those different kind of categories, Gabriel.
And if I may, Gabriel, just I want you to break it down so that people who are listening who are in the community, because mm-hmm. my community, like my church community, my faith-based communities are very afraid, like you said. Mm-hmm. They placed it out there to scare people. Mm-hmm. So please break it down for them so they'll be able to understand exactly what that means.
Okay.
Thanks.
I'll do my best here. The first thing to keep in mind is that the charges that are no longer bail eligible are most misdemeanors and some nonviolent felonies. So violent felonies still remain bail eligible here in the state of New York. So that's the first thing to keep in mind here. So when if you ever hear law enforcement saying, oh, there's violent crimes that people are just going to walk out, that is not the case. That's not what's going on here. The second thing is that the reforms provide require, I should say, judges to use the bail law as it was intended when it was passed in 1971 to take into account. So for those who are subject to bail, some people who are being charged with violent felony offenses largely. In 1971, the legislature said we do not want people detained if they can't afford to pay bail. And the legislature included at that time 8 different forms of bail in the state of New York. Now, most people don't know this. It's been on the book since 1971. Some of those are the things we tend to know about. Cash bail, you go and pay it in cash. Or a bond, right? You don't have the cash, so you hire a bondsman, and they pay it for you, and then you have to pay them a lot of money. And that's a huge problem here in New York and elsewhere.
Sure.
People may know about this, right? The bond industry is just extracting wealth from people. They're too poor to pay, so they got to hire this other person to pay it for them, and then they have to pay back these exorbitant fees. They would never have to do that if they had the money in their bank account to pay the bail in the first place, which is unfair. But the legislature in 1971 also included things like unsecured or partially secured bonds, meaning you pay nothing. It's like you make a promise to come back to court, and if you don't come back, then maybe you have to pay a fee. But an unsecured bond means you don't have to pay anything if you don't have it. Now, that's what the legislature included in 1971, and that's been on the books this entire time. Mm-hmm. This is really important for folks to understand. So when we've heard stories, right, up until like in the last number of years, like the Khalif Browder story, mm-hmm. as an example, one that people may know about, right? He was charged with allegedly stealing a backpack. He was held in Rikers for 3 years. He maintained his innocence the entire time. The prosecutor said, hey, if you just plead guilty, we'll let you go. He said, I am not guilty. Mm-hmm. I am not going to plead something I did not do. His family could not pull together the $2,000 or $3,000 in bail to get him out. So he was in jail in Rikers for 3 years,
sure.
2 of those years in solitary confinement. The judge at that time had the option to let Khalif go on an unsecured bond. But the judge never took that into account and gave that to Khalif as an option.
Right.
And that's been happening for years in this state. Now, that's on the books. The judges could have been doing this the entire time, but they didn't.
Mm-hmm.
So the new laws say, okay, for the people who are subject to bail, judges have to consider whether or not a bail amount could be something they can pay or not. Is that going to cause an undue hardship for them? And they have to offer an unsecured or partially secured bond to that person. This is important for 2 reasons. One, it's going to bring greater equity into the process here. But 2, and this gets involved when we talk about violent offenses, this is really important. A lot of things in New York are considered violent felony offenses that if we were to have a conversation about what that thing was, we would probably agree that that's not what we think of when we hear the term.
Violent.
If we go back to Khalif Browder, he was charged with allegedly stealing a backpack. That is, under New York law, considered a violent felony offense. Now, any of us who have had something stolen, a backpack or something, we're not going to dispute that that's wrong. Right, that would be something that would I would probably shake me if it happened to me on the street. So that's not what we're talking about here. But we're talking about how the law categorizes people.
Mm-hmm.
And once people get categorized into that violent bucket, boy, all sorts of things all of a sudden seem to be appropriate. We could just hold them in jail forever. We will just take away their rights. We'll not treat them as human beings. So the reforms are attempting to bring into the process a degree of justice and fairness that accounts for people's ability to pay. And to be direct about it, when you hear some of the law enforcement folks who are saying, well, what about the worst of the worst, people who have committed very terrible offenses? Without getting too deep into that debate, which I think should very much be had, there is still on the books the ability for judges to what's called remand people. You hear this term remand, which is a legal term. Maybe Taryn can talk a little bit about it here. But it essentially means that they can hold people without offering them bail at all. They can just detain them in jail until the case. And there's some fairly strict benchmarks that have to be met for judges to be able to do that. But it does happen with some regularity here for those cases that people tend to think of as the ones being the worst of the worst, the ones that strike the most fear into people. Mm-hmm. So when we hear prosecutors or other law enforcement or some lawmakers right now saying, oh, this is going to cause chaos, this is not going to cause chaos. We have a systems change that's happening here. And it may be bumpy here at the start, but part of this is because we've been doing something for the last 40 years.
Sure.
That's caused a great deal of injustice, that's deepened racial disparities in our communities, that's wasted billions of taxpayer dollars. We got to turn that ship around, and this is the first major step towards doing that end on the pretrial side.
Sure. Taryn, and do you want to add to that around the history piece and then, you know, tie into what Gabe talked about, this idea of remand, and what does that mean?
Sure. Well, I think it's also useful for everyone to know that it's not a novel idea to not have cash bail. Like, mm-hmm. this has been happening in the federal system for 40 years. I was a prosecutor in the federal system, as you described. I was involved in civil rights cases, human trafficking cases, a whole host of cases when I worked in the Eastern District of New York. And in the federal system, judges have the full options, all the options that Gabriel described. They can release somebody on their own recognizance. They can release somebody secured, unsecured, partially secured. But there's never cash bail, mm-hmm. at least not in Brooklyn. I mean, I practiced in the courthouse in Brooklyn for years. Never once saw anybody offer cash to get out of jail. And that's just not how it works. So this is not a revolutionary concept to look at each individual, figure out what their means are, figure out what their ties to the community are, and figure out what's going to help that person come back to court. That ultimately is the purpose of the pretrial release process. As Gabriel mentioned, remand is available for some class of cases. It's narrow in New York State. Murder cases, remand without an option of bail or pretrial release has always been on the books, and that will continue to be on the books. And as Gabriel described, the law has not changed very much with regard to individuals who are charged with crimes classified as violent in New York. So if you're charged with a violent crime or a sex crime in New York State, cash bail is still available to the judge, but this new law requires the judges to consider whether or not cash bail is necessary. And it asks them to look at the individual before them and make a determination about whether cash bail is going to be impossible for that person to make, and whether a different form of pretrial release would encourage them to come back to court.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, I want to talk a little bit about, you know, bail reform has occurred in different states to some degree. Most notably, New Jersey has kind of lifted up for what seemingly appears to be some progression there around bail reform. Has New York gone far enough on bail reform, Taryn? And what are your thoughts on that?
Well, I do think there's more work ahead, to be honest. So the system in New Jersey is a little bit different. In New Jersey, the bail system is based on an individualized evaluation of whether the defendant poses a risk of flight, meaning they won't come back to court, or whether they present a danger of committing a new crime on release. And judges are provided with a pretrial risk assessment tool that has been standardized across the state. And what it is it's like a quiz, basically, that helps the judge make a determination about whether or not this person is likely to commit a new crime or flee. The judge isn't bound by the results of that test. It just is more information for the judge to consider. But in New Jersey, the reforms have been very successful. They've enjoyed a significant reduction in crime rates and a reduction in overall arrests and a much lower rate of pretrial detention. And the statistic that blew my mind was last year in New Jersey, cash bail was set three times. Three times on an initial arrest. It was set a few more times for people who failed to come back to court and they, you know, didn't make their court date, had a bench warrant out, something along those lines, but three times at the stage of initial arraignment. And that's how successful they had been in moving away from a cash-based or needs-based system to a risk-based system. So New Jersey's bill is different than New York. It is not based on crime classification like New York's, but it has had very positive results in determining, you know, who is going to be likely risk of flight and who is likely to come back to court and what conditions to set to ensure that those people return to court.
Sure. And, Gabe, you know, again, your thoughts, Gabriel, in terms of has New York gone far enough on bail reform, do you think?
I think that the answer to that question in part is going to depend on who you're asking. I mean, with my own take on this, and for Catal, we think the reforms that have passed are pretty extraordinary. There's a lot more that needs to be done to overhaul both the pretrial part of our justice system, but also all the other parts. You know, there's just yesterday the governor announced two only clemencies. Right, we have thousands of people, as the folks at RAP have been talking about for some time, who are serving life sentences in prisons without life without parole. Basically, they're never being paroled. The governor's not using his clemency powers, and RAP has been focusing on that effort and pushing the governor to do so. That's an example of an area that needs additional reform as well. And on the back end, once people are released on the reentry side, a lot more needs to be done. So with regards to bail reform specifically, we think that more should be done to empty the jails here in the state of New York and to invest in communities. First and foremost, there needs to be investments in the communities that have been targeted and hit hard by mass incarceration. That's here in the city of New York, but that's also all around the state. Much more of that has to be done here. The concern that we have right now is that a number of legislators and law enforcement officials are trying to use scare tactics to roll back the reforms that we just won. And that's unconscionable in many ways, because instead of working to try to ensure that these reforms are successful and we continue to build on them to get to a period in New York when we can say we've ended mass incarceration and we're investing in communities in the way that we should, instead, many of these actors, systems actors, are saying, oh, I don't want to give up my power. I don't want to change anything. I want to keep things as they are.
And as a result, kind of weaponizing fear, right? Yes. And all that kind of stuff.
That's
sure.
Exactly right. Mm-hmm. So for us, this session, what one thing that the legislature should absolutely do is related to these reforms specifically, is to put more money into the implementation process. There's a provision here around non-monetary release conditions. That's the term for it. But it's basically, and people should really understand this, when folks are not going, no longer being held in jail, they can be, there's other non-monetary release conditions that can be applied, right? Supervision can be applied, but also assistance to those individuals to get them back to court. This is really important because I think it is something new for many people, and they haven't seen this, but it's something that could help these reforms work quite successfully. One of the things that's happening is you're hearing law enforcement say, well, these people are just going to walk out, and then what's going to happen? And that's true for many people, and they should walk out. They shouldn't be in jail at all. There are going to be folks who are going to need additional assistance, right? They're going to need, whether it's mental health services, drug addiction services, other supports to make sure that they get back to court on time. But the court, if it believes that there's other concerns that need to be accounted for here, the court can apply other restrictions to people under supervised release, essentially, under these pretrial service agencies. Those agencies and the supports that they need to be successful need to be funded appropriately. And people need to make sure, we need to make sure that the resources that people need are available here in New York City and in each county in the state.
Taryn, do you have anything else you want to add to that? Gabe, before we take our musical break, it's 10:28. We're going to take a short musical break in a minute. But any other thoughts you care to add to that, Taryn?
I agree with Gabriel that we have some more work to do. The unfunded nature of the bill is a challenge, particularly for some of the counties outside of New York City in particular. New York City has the Criminal Justice Agency, the Pretrial Services Supervision Group that can provide some of those supports. But I agree there needs to be more funding and more attention paid to how this bill is actually rolled out so that people can get the supports that they need.
And that's connected a little bit to implementation and all that kind of stuff. And so when we come back from our musical break, we'll transition to talk a little bit about, you know, pretrial and implementation of bail reform and pretrial services as well when we come back. And so Harmony, how are you feeling?
I'm feeling fired up and motivated. And, of course, I must say, donate to WBAI, www.give2wbai.org. I'm counting on you. Be a buddy.
Justice, how are you feeling?
I'm doing good. This is very interesting. I'm hoping that we are able to put the community at ease as we learn more about bail reform moving forward.
And you know, to make a pledge here at WBAI, what do they have to do, Harmony?
They must call 516-620-3602. Please call 516-620-3602 or www.give2wbai.org.
And it's important that we ask that you make these pledges here at WBAI. Unlike traditional radio or more commercialized radio, this is listener-sponsored, commercial-free radio. Therefore, WBAI, and by extension, this radio show On the Count, sustains its existence by way of you making pledges and you supporting, because we're not sponsored or influenced by corporate interests. So please make your pledges. Please support where you can. We're going to play this quick little piece, and then we're going to come back.
Fire.
In a minute.
Sick of the average, I need a chance, but I never had it. Not a post bail or probation, goal reaching, seeking my destination. Wasn't the one who was hating, who is he? Plays all on the station. Play no games, this is all motivation. Not for clout, for the culture. Can't stand all the torture. Why was I chosen as a lesser when I ain't progressing? Look what they done to our children. I'm numbing my feelings. The city is sickening. Politicians always bickering. They just need another dollar. If you hear me, can you holler back? Look at a future where nothing is trapped. Think outside the box. Think outside the cell. Put your minds together. We could all prevail.
On my up, I put one foot in front of the other. When I'm up, it's happening. Every damn thing I know I'm up. I'm caffeine, the crack team. And when I'm up, it's getting rough. But what the fuck, in the thick of it. Some ain't built for this shit, and so they chill. Go home, little boy, go make a quilt. You made your bed, that's one less guilt. I haven't killed, I'm a cat. I never cry for spilt milk, and with the cards I was dealt, I made it out of the kilt. My motivation, it never knelt, forever prevails. Ever felt into the jail cells on Orion's belt. The early burn gets the worm until it fell.
Motivation Prevail by Jay Prophet, Mercedes, and Megan. These are actually participants from the Fortune Society that made this song. So it's really powerful. Thought I'd share that piece in context. But we're back in studio here at 99.5 FM WBAI. This radio show is called On the Count, the Prison and Criminal Justice Report. I'm joined in studio by my colleagues and hosts, Harmony and Justice. Our other host, Stephen Hummel Manguel, is not with us today, but we send him good energy during this time. And I'm joined also in studio by our guests, who are no strangers to me necessarily, Gabriel Saya and Taryn Merkel. And so we're talking about the current bail reform that was implemented on January 1st, 2020. So, Gabriel and Taryn, you know, want to talk a little bit about like pretrial services and the implementation of bail reform for 2020. And, you know, I'll start with you, Gabriel, your thoughts on like pretrial services, because people, who, you know, to your point earlier, they aren't just being released just to be like, you open up the floodgates and people just running around doing nothing, right? There are services in place, but then there's also some implementation pieces that need to also be, moved along a little bit more too. So Gabriel, talk about that, and then Taryn, we'll turn it over to you too.
Yeah, I want to start by just a bit of context here, so that folks understand. So keep in mind, we've been living with a system of mass incarceration that's been growing, building over the last 40 or 50 years. And one of the things that means, of course, which you all talk about on this show all the time, is the number of people in our jails and prisons, right? We're locking up too many people. Okay. But it also means that we've been defunding or underfunding or diminishing the social safety net in this country for the last 50 years, right? So housing, education, healthcare, these are some of the subjects that are of the subject of fights now in the presidential campaign, right? But these things are things impacting communities in a really significant way. My co-founder Lorenzo Jones says the criminal justice system is the when people fall through the social safety net, right? When they don't get housing, they don't get mental health services, when they don't get the care that they need, when the investments aren't made for them, and when they fall through that social safety net, the criminal justice system is the bucket that they fall into. Now, we've spent billions of dollars in this country funding that system, funding that bucket, while diminishing or underfunding all these other systems that help communities be healthy and safe. With that context in mind, when we're talking about pretrial services, we're talking about an expansion of services needed for people that are outside of and not connected to jail. And the reason that's really important is the vast majority of people cycling through our jails are low-income folks, mm-hmm. right? Many of whom have mental health issues or other needs that have not been met, right? And they've been now, they're in the system because they've been arrested, right, which is a whole other part of this fight that we're not even talking about with bail reform that we should, which is what are we doing with our police? What kind of reforms are we going to make with the police? That is well overdue, right? But that's not the topic of this discussion, but it is a connected piece here.
Sure.
But once people have been arrested by the police, and we know who's being focused on for those arrests here in the city of New York and around the state, is low-income people, predominantly people of color, right? Where does the state get, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars to hire 500 cops for the subways, right? But not put money into the housing and other things that
to reinvest it in the community. Sure.
It's really imperative to keep that context mm-hmm. in mind when we're talking about the pretrial services. Because there's a range of things that once people are in the system that can be done to ensure that they're pulled out of that, they're out of that system as quickly as possible, right? Commensurate with public safety. Now, here in the city of New York, so many people being swept into the system should never, ever be there in the first place.
Right.
Now, not all those people necessarily go to Rikers. Mm-hmm. We have a lot of people that get swept into the system with arrests or they get come into contact with police. They should never be in the system in the first place. They're there partly because we've incentivized that by building a system of mass incarceration. So police are out there just, in many respects, like sweeping up low-income people, people of color. The pretrial services that are available can be implemented and deployed in a way to get folks out of the system as quickly as possible, commensurate with public safety. That's what should happen here. Mm-hmm. If the state will put the funding in to do that, then that is what can occur. Now, the city has got some funding for these pretrial systems here. So in the city of New York, it's going to look different than it will in the rest of the state right now, because there is some money here in the city that was invested for expansion of pretrial services. So now that the bail law is here, those pretrial services are expanding. The rest of the state didn't get that funding, which is a longer discussion about how the funding stuff has worked, which means that one of the things we have to do in this legislative session is ensure that the state puts the funding in for the rest of the counties and the rest of the state. So Long Island, Buffalo, Albany, these other jurisdictions, get those resources to ensure that when people are brought into the system, they're getting the services that they need to be moved out as quickly as possible, commensurate with public safety.
Mm-hmm. Taryn, pretrial services and implementation.
I think that's such an important part of the bill, right? Because if we don't actually provide folks with the supports that they need, either to overcome trauma in their own backgrounds that has caused mental health conditions, or perhaps turning to drug and alcohol due to compensation for underlying historical trauma. There's so many people in the criminal justice system who have suffered at some point in their lives. And getting those folks the help that they need so that they don't end up inside where oftentimes their systems become worse. You know, you go to jail as a low-level offender for a joint, and you sometimes leave as a gang member. And that is a reality that we have to confront about our jails. We can't just lock people up and throw away the key because they are too poor to make bail. And so we have to encourage our pretrial systems to grow sufficiently everywhere in the state so that people can get the supports they need to overcome their personal challenges and come back to court, complete that case. Mm-hmm. And in the lower level cases, hopefully that doesn't turn into a longer career of being involved in the criminal justice system.
Gabriel?
I just want to make one point here. I want to emphasize this term pretrial. Like, so we're here talking about pretrial mm-hmm. bails, pretrial. It's really important to remember when we're talking pretrial means that person has just been charged.
And they've not
been convicted of anything yet.
Absolutely.
Right? So all of this stuff around bail reform, we got to keep that in mind as well. We're talking about people who have been charged with crimes, not convicted of anything yet. That's why I was saying this policing part here is so important. The prosecutor part here is so important. There's a recent DA's race in Queens, right? There's going to be more DA's races coming up in the years ahead in all five boroughs. We should be listening as voters for how these prosecutors are talking about how they're going to ensure that people are not being wrongfully charged, right? That the police are not sweeping people in the system that shouldn't be there. We should listen to mayoral candidates for when they talk about what are they going to do to reform the police, right? To make sure that the police are not simply sweeping people into the justice system unnecessarily. All of the folks we're talking about here pretrial are there without having been convicted of anything yet. They have simply been charged. That is really critical. So when you hear these folks saying, well, we should be holding these people in jail until we can figure something out, ask yourself, if I was charged with something, would I want to be held in jail? Do I think that should be happening without the opportunity to defend myself in a country that supposedly we're supposed to have a system that says you're innocent until proven guilty? Mm-hmm. But we have a system now that if you're a poor person or if you're a person of color, you don't get the luxury of that constitutional right oftentimes, right? And it is a luxury for many people. And so this is about bringing balance back. We have to keep that pretrial word in mind because mm-hmm. we're not talking about people who have been convicted yet. Mm-hmm. We're talking about people who have been charged with a crime swept in. And in many instances, especially in a city that has practiced decades of broken windows policing, we should always be questioning why people are in the system in the first place. How did that person get there? Mm-hmm. I want to add one thing to this, and I do not want in any way for this to be taken as though I am understating or ignoring the very real harms that can be done to people.
Absolutely.
The very real challenges that can be. Andre, you know this really well from your work. Like, people do hurt people.
Absolutely.
Like, they're, like, harm can and is done. And that is a real thing. So we're not sitting here talking about acting like this. That doesn't occur.
Sure.
What we are saying is when it occurs, how do we address it in a way that reduces the chance of it ever happening again, right? And that ensures that there's some kind of supports there for the people who have been harmed, right? And that we're accounting for safety and accountability in a way that does not require us to put people in cages and dehumanize them. Because we have decades of research about what that has done, and it hasn't produced the things that we want. So, I mean, so much of your work has touched on this, Andre, and the work that you've done and the work of others like at Common Justice and so forth. So that's an area you know well. But I do think this, keeping in mind what we're talking about, when we talk about bail and pretrial, is very important here so we don't lose sight of that.
And it's interesting, Gabe, you mentioned that because I get a text from Humble. Hi, Humble. How you doing? Our other host. He's like, make sure you talk about trauma as it relates to this whole thing of bail reform, etc. So it's a true point, Gabe. Any other thoughts, Taryn, on this idea of pretrial services and implementation?
Other than that, I wholeheartedly agree that we need to meet people where they're at, whether it's in their recovery from trauma or a cycle of drug addiction, or just a really tough spot in their lives when they're economically disadvantaged and had to steal something to survive or to eat. We have to meet those underlying conditions and help people heal to get people out of the criminal justice system. Throwing people in jail has proven for decades it's not going to help communities get better. And I just wanted to give a shout out to our local DA, Eric Gonzalez.
Woo-hoo!
Because one thing that I would like to say is he implemented a lot of these bail reforms 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. And I think it's important for everyone in the state to know that crime in Brooklyn has continued to go down. This has not caused crime to go up. it has caused crime to continue to go down. His office has taken a presumption of no cash bail, except for extraordinary cases of violence, things along those lines, and crime has continued to go down under his tenure.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, I know that there's been some recent developments, fairly recent, in the last 48 hours or so, right? With Andrea Cousins has now seemed to maybe looking at things a little different as it relates to bail reform. You care each to talk a little bit about that and your thoughts on it.
We should understand the reform process as a political fight. It's always a political fight. It's going to be a political fight. And if we want to hold on and continue to build on the reforms that we've won over the years and keep momentum going forward to make New York a fairer and more just place, we got to be a part of movements that are helping to make that happen here. Because the elected officials, as good as they may be at times, are going to divert and do something we don't want them to do if we don't hold them accountable. I think that the majority leader, they've done some good things here with this bail reform package, and I really wish that she was standing more firm and saying we're gonna hold on and see how this thing plays out. We're gonna fund it the way that we need to. We're not gonna go around and make these changes until we can watch to see how this
and
thing
measure,
plays out.
Right?
Yeah, Sharon sure. Just noted the DA here in Brooklyn has implemented these reforms 2 years ago on his own in many respects, and crime has continued to go down. We know this stuff can work. So we're going to hold legislators, including the majority leader and the governor and the speaker, all of them accountable. Say, no, you've got to put the stuff, you've got to put the resources to invest them here to make this work. And we shouldn't be going back to undo reforms. We should be talking about what's the next stage of reforms we're going to pass. What about parole reform? What about the elder parole bill? What about the fair and timely parole bill? What about the less is more parole bill?
About
what about solitary confinement?
Absolutely.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
What about voting rights? Mm-hmm. Like, that's what we should be hearing from them. Not these responses to these false claims by law enforcement saying the sky is going to fall.
Mm-hmm. Taryn?
Like Gabriel said earlier, I think it's really important for everyone to understand we are not saying that there's no violent crime and that there aren't sometimes bad things that happen. And with this recent spate of hate crimes in particular, I understand that people are scared and I understand that people are skittish, and for good reason. It's awful. Hate crimes and things that shake the community are part of the work that I did when I was chief of civil rights in Brooklyn, and those crimes are designed to scare people. That's the point. And without in any way diminishing the importance of those concerns and those fears, which are very well justified, it's too early to say, oh, we made a mistake, we need to change it. I think that we need to let these reforms play out, see where things sort of settle. I do think there's more work, though, on the bail front, because at the end of the day, New York has not eliminated cash bail. We still have unequal systems of justice depending on what kind of crime you're charged with. If you're charged with a very serious violent crime but you have the money to pay bail, you may well get out.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're charged with that same crime but don't have the money to pay bail, you might be stuck only because you can't afford it, not because you continue to present a danger and not because you continue to present a risk of flight. So I think individualized determinations are really important, and the judges don't have that. You know, they can make those individualized determinations, but as Gabriel pointed out, historically the way that bail has gone in New York, cash bail has been set in almost every case where cash bail has been available.
You know, and Gabriel, Taryn, we never have enough time here, right? And so we're winding down. We have maybe around 3 or 4 minutes left or so before we close. And Justice and Harmony, you know, it's always that time, right? But any closing thoughts, right? In addition to that, anything, any of the work that Katal is doing now, I know Katal is moving along and taking the lead with Less is More, mm-hmm. mentioning some of that stuff, and any other thoughts around what the Brennan Center is doing. But closing thoughts on bail reform, and then like what are each of your organizations doing respectively?
Sure. I think with bail reform, this legislative session, we have to work on making sure these investments are made to make sure the laws can be implemented appropriately, and we have to fight back against efforts to roll back these reforms. It's almost never gone well when there's been pushback on reforms that have passed, when you've got law enforcement saying, oh, we this is going to be the end of days. And then they go back in and change it. It usually always is about reinforcing the kind of systems that we're trying to undo and change. And so we're going to have to continue this fight, which is unfortunate because there's a number of other fights that really deserve our full attention.
Right.
I mentioned a few other ones, but one major bill we're working on this year with a number of other groups is the Less is More bill. And this relates to parole, and I'll be brief here. In New York State, we re-incarcerate more people who are on parole than any other state except Illinois. Right now, there's over 6,000 people in our state prisons who were there because of a technical violation of parole, not because they committed a new crime. There's hundreds of people on Rikers that are there and detained and in jails around the state for technical violations of parole. A technical violation is a thing like missing an appointment with your parole officer or
coming in late.
Sure. Anybody, you've had folks on the show talk about this. Mm-hmm. Anyone who's on parole in New York will talk about the stress of like, look, I have to walk on eggshells here because at any moment I can make a very common mistake. The train could be late, as is the case all the time. I could be late to my PO and all of a sudden end up back inside of jail or prison. So we're working on a bill to reform that. We're working with groups like A Little Piece of Light, Donna Hilton's group. Mm-hmm. You started the show talking about the women, so Donna's focused on the women as well. Groups like Unchained out of Syracuse, the Columbia Justice Lab, the Independent Commission on Reform, the Lipman Commission. So we're working with them and a range of others to get this bill passed.
And the Fortune Society is going to be joining you.
They've been engaged.
I'll be on a call with you, by the way, soon.
Good, yeah. And for your listeners, I will say once a month we host a criminal justice reform call. It's not specific to any one campaign or another. We've had a number of different folks from Fortune and a range of different groups on, and every month we just get on and get an update from Albany. And folks are just welcome to join. They can go on our social media feeds on Twitter or Facebook or on our website to find information about that. We'd be happy to – they can just call in from their lunch desk. It's 12 to 1. The next one's next Thursday.
Gabriel, thank you so much, too. And we're going to get you all back. We get Katal back to talk about – give updates about Less is More. Taryn, some closing thoughts, bail reform, implementation – Brennan Center, is it doing?
Thank you so much. You know, we still have some work to do, as we've talked about on the bail front, and there's so much more to do in New York with criminal justice reform. The thing that I fear the most is that the bail reform conversation will be such a distraction that we won't be able to advance some other very important initiatives, as Gabe has described. The Brennan Center is doing work in a number of areas. One thing that we are really passionate about is looking at the incentives that cause the criminal justice system to arrest people, to lock people up. And a lot of our work recently has been focusing on fines and fees and the massive need for fees and fines reform. One thing that people get caught up in is their inability to pay. And we know from recent research and a huge report that we just put out that is ultimately a very, very inefficient and ineffective way to proceed. We also need to have a conversation about violence. And I invite everybody to come on January 28th. The Brennan Center's hosting a talk on addressing urban violence with a scholar from the Harvard Kennedy School and law enforcement and a violence interrupter. And we encourage folks to come. You can find out more about that on our website. And you can also follow us on Twitter. You can follow me on Twitter and keep up to date with everything the Brennan Center's up to.
Gabriel Katal, how do people get in contact with you?
Go to our website, katalcenter.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at Katal Center. They can also find me on Twitter and get in touch that way as well.
And Katal is a unique name. How do you spell it?
K-A-T-A-L.
All right, Katal Center. And Taryn, how do people get in contact with you?
Very easy to find. Google Taryn, Google Brennan Center, and you'll find us. We're also on Twitter, so very easy to find us.
Gabriel, Taryn, thank you so much for having us here. Obviously, this conversation will continue to go on as things develop. Harmony and Justice, I know you have some closing thoughts and comments before we go.
Harmony? I'd like to thank Taryn and Gabriel as well. This is a great learning opportunity. I hope that people were listening and really got something from this particular show. This is something that we have to do ongoing to make sure that we have conversations. Of course, you know, I need to have another conversation about how we stop people from going from the beginning so we won't have to worry about bail reform. But again, I think I said to Gabriel on the break, I think that everything is the underlying thing about all of the bail reforms and all the reforms in incarceration as well is racism. And one day we're going to have that long conversation about that. With that, I'd just like to give a shout out to a few of my nephews, one getting ready to go to the parole board up in Eastern. Alton Brown, we are saying prayers for you, as well as my nephew Mustafa Gobolt. You guys stay encouraged on the inside. We love you, and we are doing the work out here for those of you who are inside, not only my nephews, but all of the facilities that are listening. We are there for you, we're working for you, and we want you to keep hope alive.
Justice?
Yes, I'd like to thank you both for coming in today. Again, that was really enlightening, and we need to have another conversation, definitely. But I'd like to invite you in the community to come to Preserving Family Rights, which is being sponsored by PAM, which is Preserve a Mom Project, and it's going to be held on Saturday, February 8th. 2020 from 11:30 a.m. to 3:30 p.m. At the Hamilton Grange Public Library. The address is 503-145-145th Street in Harlem, New York. So please go to Eventbrite in order to register and get more information.
Shout out to Humble and to all of the people who remain behind the prison gates and walls, and to all of those who are part of the criminal justice reform movement. We thank you for your sacrifice and your commitment to this work. As Eddie would always say before we close this show, don't give in, don't give out, don't give up. Stand tall in spite of it all and stay
on the count.
I'm sick of the average. I need a chance, but I never had it. Not a post bill of probation. Go reaching, seeking my destination. Wasn't the one who was hating. Who is he? Plays all on the station. Play no games. This is all motivation. Not for clout, for the culture. Can't stand all the torture. Why was I chosen as a lesser when I ain't progressing? Look what they done to our children. I'm numbing my feelings. The city is sickening. Politicians always bickering. They just need another dollar. If you hear me, can you holler back? Look at a future where nothing is trapped. Think outside the box. Think outside the cell. Put your minds together. We go off the bill.
Let them know you're there.
Hi, this is Leonard Lopate, host of Leonard Lopate at Large, weekdays at 1 p.m. I want to encourage my listeners to become Lopate at Large WBAI buddies. You can become a buddy, a sustaining BAI member, for as little as $10 a month. Please go to give2wbai.org or call 516-620-3602. And thank you.
WBAI's local station board is the Pacifica Foundation board responsible for local management and operations. The next meeting of the local station board will be Wednesday, January 8th at 7 p.m. at the YWCA, 33rd Avenue, Brooklyn, New York, between Atlantic Avenue and State Street. This first local station board meeting of 2020 will also include a delegates assembly to elect WBAI representatives to the Pacifica National Board. Meetings of the local station board are open to the public, and as always, there will be an opportunity for public comment. The meeting is wheelchair accessible. Again, that's Wednesday, January 8th at 7 p.m. at the YWCA on 33rd Avenue, Brooklyn, New York. Listeners and the public are invited and welcome. You don't have to contribute to WBAI to come to the meeting, but why not? See you Wednesday.
Unpaid yourself from mental slavery. None but ourselves can free our mind. Hi, I'm Joel Landy. Help me celebrate the 60th anniversary of WBAI on Saturday, January 4th at the People's Voice Cafe. I'll be performing with David Amram, Malachi McCourt, The Raging Grannies, Lindsay Wilson, and Mike Glick. That's Saturday, January 4th at 8 p.m. at the People's Voice Cafe, 40 East 35th Street in Manhattan. That's between Madison and Park. Only $20 for a great evening, $15 for WBAI buddies.
So reserve your ticket at www.give2wbai.org. That's give, the number two, wbai.org.
Won't you help me sing these songs of freedom? All I ever have are redemption songs.
Did you hear the news? Equal Time for Free Thought has a new early morning time on Tuesdays at 5 a.m.
I know. Now people can wake up to our unique approach to the big questions of life and the way a naturalistic worldview can help us become a more peaceful and just society.
And those who aren't early birds can still listen to our program later at WBAI.org.
Arnell, do you think it's some kind of miracle?
Yeah, not so much. But still,
people running right off, it's 5 o'clock.
It's an excellent way for people to start their day.